The award-winning film director and screenwriter Max Barbico grew up in Santa Barbara, California, and he graduated from the Thatcher School nearby Ojai in 2007. Barbico instinctively knew at an early age that the art of storytelling, expressed through the written word and videography, was where his passion lay. While still an undergraduate at Yale, Barbico made time to delve into the cultures of the far corners of the world. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join Max in Santa Barbara for a journey of discovery where we'll learn how his world travels and encounters expanded his life vision and enhanced his art and craft as a scriptwriter and an award-winning film director, combined with a keen sensitivity for the art of weaving in powerful soundscapes. Barbico's second film, The Duke, produced while a directing fellow at the American Film Institute, has garnered numerous accolades, including Best Student Film at the Pasadena Film Festival. Hi, Max.
Hey, Tom.
I read a little bit cheat sheet background about you, and just fascinating story. You grew up in Montecito in Santa Barbara, and even at a very young age, you had a vision and got hooked by things visual.
I have a very engaging, hilarious, support base. My family was always kind of into movies. My dad was showing us Bond movies growing up at way too young of age. His mom bought me Boogie Nights when I was way too young, and I have an older brother, Bennett, who's a very talented visual artist and filmmaker and composer who just really kind of raised me a lot himself just through his love of cinema. So storytelling and self-expression were always at the core of what we were about as a family. And my mom is an incredibly hilarious woman, you know, just very quotable in a character out of a screwball comedy. So it was always something kind of like on my mind.
When you knew what you wanted to do at a very young age, and by the time you started college, you went to Yale and you knew you wanted to be a cinema guy. Tell us about how you developed and cultivated while you were still in college.
This is very fortunate to, like I said, have grown up in such a supportive environment and then to be plunged into an environment like Yale that's so intellectually stimulating. So the challenge then became to take advantage of all the opportunities I had been given to do what you're supposed to do in college and explore, you know, the liberal arts, but also to continue to develop my worldview and put myself in uncomfortable locales and places and do traveling.
This was a decision on your own where you intentionally, you took off for foreign countries to do things while you were still in college. Tell us about that.
I'm very much inspired by friends of mine as well who took similar avenues. I studied abroad my sophomore year into junior year in Bolivia in a documentary film program. I really had no idea what I was getting into going down into that country, but that's a country that I think since its inception hundreds of years ago has averaged, I think, a coup and a half a year. So very volatile place in Latin America.
And then Simón Bolívar.
Yeah.
They call him their Washington, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, they have statues of him in New York City, too. He was inspiring to our revolution. But self-expression, again, in Latin America, that was kind of an inherent right to these people, and I never valued it as much as I learned to value it down there, because for a lot of their history, these people in Bolivia, they weren't able to express themselves. I read a book called The Savage Detectives by Roberto Bolaño about renegade poets while I was down there on the road as well, that really just ingrained that in me. And then having nothing but, you know, a backpack on my back and a camera and trying to make sense of, you know, the vibrant culture. And I was actually in a program about historical memory, which I know you are very much about as well. My teacher was an Air Force pilot in Brazil and was jailed during the coup, and his mission down in Bolivia was to stage these art installations where people would be able to walk through them and experience torture as he had back in the day. So it very much just instilled in me the responsibility to tell stories that matter, and also to not be afraid to dig for stuff.
Do you think it was elements such as interacting with people who lived through great periods of their life without any literal freedoms, with fear as an operative, that was a game shifter in your life when you came back to the United States?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. With, what is it? It's the cliche thing, with great privilege comes, you know, great responsibility. but that's totally how I felt. It just heightened my antennae in a way that hadn't been heightened like that before. It could be the most, and here, having traveled around the world in third world countries and things like that, and having put myself in precarious situations here, it's very much now translated into exploring what I can offer and what I could say. And a lot of times, a lot of these scenarios seem banal compared to the travels I'd had. So it's about finding beauty in that, in lyrical moments, in kind of the ordinary, which I think everyone could relate to when you have an epiphany or realization.
Talk to us about some of your other travels. You were in Indonesia, where you experienced and saw some incredible stuff that you would never see in the United States, ever.
Two really good friends of mine from high school, Jack and Bennett, who were very much embarked on this kind of quest to travel and see the world throughout college. Bennett was teaching environmental science in a international school in Bali and was down there surfing. Jack, I traveled with throughout Southeast Asia, living in hostels and just kind of exploring crazy stuff that people tell us that they had seen. And
what was really incredible was your experience of the warriors.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to have you share that.
Yeah. So the three of us camping out, riding motorbikes, surfing, living in Bennett's house, would take these excursions every weekend when he wasn't teaching. And one of these was to an island called Sumba, where there's no electricity and they're still living a village life. I think it's in East Indonesia, for a festival called Pasola, which is a rite of passage every year before the rice harvest, where villagers would get on horseback and don indigenous garb, and in order to guarantee a fertile harvest, try to spear each other off their horses and spill the blood so the ground could be fertile. So we went with the goal of documenting this, and we did. We put GoPros on these guys' heads, kind of got as close as we could, and it was a really remarkable experience just to be welcomed into something like that, and then also to have done it, you know, to have like had this harebrained idea and gone and done it. We never ended up doing anything with that footage. It's still somewhere on a hard drive. Like, life happened after we came back, which is kind of terrible to think about, but
you're not done yet.
Yeah, we're not done yet. Maybe someday we'll get to that.
All of your journeys around the world and your college time, you were training the whole time to be a videographer. How did you go to the next level and create actual videos and movies and films?
Like, knowing that I wanted to direct meant knowing that I had to have kind of a handle on every part of the process, from shooting stuff to writing stuff to learning how to lay sound under stuff, and also having a grasp kind of on how absurd life can be and how different people are. So, you know, once I came back from traveling, I settled in New York City and did some freelancing with some friends in order just to get the energy of that dense place. I knew I'd always kind of end back up in California.
Freelancing as a videographer?
As a videographer, I was doing like a lot of random stuff. I did a web series for a rock and roll band that, again, took me through the country to Wounded Knee Reservation, places like that, on tour with them, and a lot of like makeup tutorials for a fashion website in New York, which is a portal into another world that I had no idea about. I eventually applied to film school at the American Film Institute Conservatory as a directing fellow and was fortunate enough to get in. I spent some time working on American Hustle, the David O. Russell movie, which was a great experience seeing how a production like that worked. And, you know, for the last 2 years, I've been able to kind of buckle down and really distill all this life experience and technical training into short fiction films, training to make longer form narrative films.
And you won an award, the Pasadena Film Festival, when you were a student at AFI, correct?
Yeah, we were fortunate enough to win the best student short at the Pasadena International Film Festival for my thesis movie, The Duke, based on the memoir I'm the Duke by J.P. Duke, which is about an NFL linebacker with concussions. It's a fictional movie. Our actor, LaMonica Garrett, actually was nominated for Best Actor in that same festival, which was amazing. I was so happy for him as well.
Nice. And going back in time, your first film, as I recall, was very close to home. It had to do with your mom and your dad. That's really powerful.
Yeah, my thesis in college was a documentary called Mommy, I'm a Bastard that actually ballooned after I graduated into a feature-length piece, and that's just about my open adoption and the three families that are kind of responsible for who I am and where I am, and telling the crazy story of my conception and my birth and my adoption through these three distinct lenses, one of which, you know, very, like I described my family, irreverent, zany, showbiz, Jews from California, my biological mother's family, conservative, Reagan-era government men, and my birth father's family, led by like a newswoman who's half black, half Native American in Washington, D.C. as well, and kind of the bouillabaisse and the richness of life that is kind of at the core of what I'm about and what I'm trying to do.
It sounds like this is not plausible. This is a comprised...
And the best, you know, stories kind of are. It's better than I could...
You couldn't make it up.
Yeah, I couldn't make it up, and that's why it's a documentary, you know, and not a scripted thing. It's about finding the story and then, you know, choosing the appropriate form and kind of letting that take its own life, like letting the boulder roll down the hill and just trying to keep it from careening off.
Talk to us about you as a videographer, as a cinema photographer, both visual and auditory, and what is closest to your heart. What are you trying to show and communicate, and how do you do it?
I kind of touched on it before. It's about seeing familiar stuff in new ways and finding lyrical moments in what can be considered ordinary. And there's great value in dissonance, you know. Like flat, brightly lit space with very serene, more soothing audio, or vice versa. It's really about, I think, for me, visuals always start from a place of like an emotional place and character more than anything. And it's about, I always think about the elements you have at your disposal when you're a filmmaker. It's like having as an audio guy, radio guy, you know this, having like a switchboard in a studio, you know, and you can never go to 11 on every element. You know, you always need to go, you know, 5 here, you know, whether that's a chatty Cathy, like in a dialogue scene, you know, and then you could like heighten it up with like a nice little camera move. Or you just lay back for a very serene, still moment with the landscape. It just is about recognizing what's going to, you know, make the moment feel balanced and rich and unique.
Give us an example of how you would use auditory elements to create an angsty scene.
I mean, this is in the thesis movie that I alluded to earlier. There's always very much a fluorescent buzz going on in this one kind of scene we're coming back to throughout.
Hey, Dave! Have your barbecue, babe!
Duke!
Hey! You guys are out of soap. I'll see you.
And you could barely hear it, but it's very present, and it just kind of gnaws at you. It grows on you, and it seeps into your DNA, and I think that very much affects how you experience that moment.
And yet the viewer or listener might not even quite be consciously aware of what's making them on edge.
Exactly. You want to leave them with a moment, leave them feeling like they had a moment that almost was, so they're still thinking about it, you know, as they're walking out of the theater.
And let's go visual for a moment. The powerful tools within your toolbox that you like and you enjoy.
I love moving the camera, and this movie was like very interesting to me. Again, the thesis movie, because there wasn't a lot of camera movement.
This was the first one.
This is the Duke. It was very still and again like formal, but we were playing with anamorphic lenses, so everything looked a little off and distorted, whether that's flares or kind of like symmetrical architecture that then became askew. With my documentary, that was very much about embracing all the different textures of the archival materials that we were using, so it kind of would evoke a mixtape and this collage that you were seeing for the first time.
And again, backstory, the Duke, J.P. Duke, was your poster child for those suffering brain damage as professional football players. And so what you were trying to show and communicate was that distorted way of literally seeing the world.
Yeah, I mean, we all have those days. It's not to belittle or trivialize the very dire circumstances of these CT-stricken athletes, but we all have those days when the world seems booby-trapped, you know, and everything seems like a little off and you seem like an alien. Because, I mean, life is absurd. It's inherently absurd. So that's what that movie was about, getting at kind of that sensibility.
All right, Max, we're just about out of time. If somebody wanted to learn more about you and your world and your videography and your films, where would they go? What would they do?
You go to maxbarbaco.com.
Spell that.
MaxBarbaco.com or IamTheDuke.com. That's the most recent film. And email me. Let's hang out.
Max Barbaco, videographer. filmmaker, audio magician. Thank you so much for sharing and visiting in Santa Barbara, your hometown.
Thank you for being here.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Santa Barbara.
This guy, I tell you, J.P. Duke is the Duke.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. Our San Francisco-based associate producer is Molly Blaisdell, covering the San Francisco Bay Area, the island of Maui, and the South Pacific. Our Wisconsin-based associate producer is Julie Henning,